You seem to juggle soloing and your duties at the orchestra and teaching. And what is your life like right now?
Well, I would have to say, first and foremost, it's rewarding. It is such a privilege to first be able to say that I am a member of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Not concertmaster, but just a member of this great orchestra is really one of the great privileges of my life, up there with being a parent, being a husband. And all these other things are great, great perks that come with the job. Being invited to go play a concerto in South Dakota or asked to teach in Japan. All these things are great, great perks. Just the mere act of walking on stage at the Kimmel Center three times a week and having 3,200 friends, if you will, applauding warmly, it never, ever gets old. There's never a moment where I think, okay, back to work. No. It's an incredible thrill and many goosebump moments.
Most people know who the concertmaster is because you come out on stage and you get the applause and you tune the orchestra. But for those who don't know, what does a concertmaster do?
When I won this job, my father was practically yelling it out from the mountaintops that his son had become concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and everybody said, oh, that's great news, Dr. Kim, but what's a concertmaster? Concertmaster is, first and foremost, the first chair violinist. There are more violins in an orchestra than any other instrument. There are over 30 violins. And so many times we violins are carrying the melody. And so the first violin is kind of acting as the quarterback of the section. And I establish bowing patterns, meaning if we're going to use lots of changes of bow, if we're going to play with a slow bow to create a thicker sound, or if we're going to play with a light bow and create a more ethereal sound. Those are the things on stage. Also, there are some unspoken things that happen. The concertmaster acts as a liaison between the conductor and the members of the orchestra, and vice versa. Perhaps the conductor may not know all of the members of the orchestra so well personally, so he may ask me, you know, I was thinking maybe of asking the third oboist if she might be able to play louder. Do you think that would be okay? Is she receptive to constructive criticism? And I would say, oh, absolutely. She's a real mensch, you know, this kind of thing. And then vice versa, perhaps somebody in the back of the second violins might say, you know, could you ask the maestro to speak a little louder in rehearsal? He's kind of whispering to the front people, but we're not hearing it. Things as mundane as that. And finally, the concertmaster acts as a kind of a civic face of the orchestra, and I do a lot of public functions where I speak on behalf of the orchestra. As a concertmaster, I must take the place of a music director sometimes, of the conductor, who may be off traveling and may not be in town, and in that case, I take over those duties.
You have your violin here. Can you illustrate what you were talking about when you described the different bowing decisions that you make?
I could kind of show you an example of how I can influence the way a melody is spun by the orchestra. Let me use the slow movement of Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik as an example. This is a melody that many people probably might recognize. And at first, I'm going to use one long bow and try to capture as many notes under one bow as I can without changing the bow. Now, if I decided, okay, well, I think we need more bow, so I'm going to have us change the bow, the direction that we change the bow, many times, then suddenly it'll sound like I'm a singer and I'm using many different syllables. I've changed the syntax that I'm creating. Perhaps I'm taking many more breaths in the middle of my phrase. So here's one that I'm breaking the bow, as it were. So these are the kind of things that I can influence as a concertmaster. And I can also influence simply by kind of the way I might angle my head. Everybody is, of course, watching the conductor peripherally and directly while they're playing, alternately with their own instrument, with the music. But out of the corner of their eye, at least I'm hoping, they might be looking a little bit at the concertmaster as well. So if I perhaps might tilt my head a little coquettishly to the side, kind of saying to my colleagues, hey, let's play this a little more playfully, that might just happen. Or I might kind of bear down and turn a little bit my face to the orchestra with a serious kind of scowl on my face saying, this is intense music, this is death here, and perhaps the sound might darken. These are kind of the tricks of the trade.
So do you do those things in rehearsal and then in performance? They would know to look to you for those kinds of things?
I think so. I think as a professional musician, we try to recreate as much in rehearsal as we will in the actual concert. But there's just no real substitute for having a live audience and that crackle, that electricity in the air. So as much as I do, I try to create beforehand in rehearsal some of those physical, facial clues that I want to give to my section. Sometimes there's just no substitute for getting on stage, being a little nervous, those butterflies going, and then when we're in the concert, then all the body motion comes into play, facial expressions, nod of the head, things like that.
Is there a typical day when you have a concert and a rehearsal one day?
I guess a typical day in the life of a concertmaster would probably begin with getting to the hall early to check my part, just kind of that last minute perusal of everything. And a concertmaster, most of the orchestra meets in what we call a break room. There's tables and sofas and computers so people can check their emails, and a refrigerator and a microwave and a coffee machine, just like corporate America. And the orchestra will hang out there and play cards and get ready for the concert. There's a locker room like a country club. Everybody's got their own locker where they keep their tuxedos and their dresses. But the concertmaster always has their own dressing room, very much like the conductor. And that is because as the so-called quarterback of the team, sometimes there are things to discuss that need to be discussed in private. Personnel issues, repertoire issues, perhaps an interview like we're doing right now. And so I will go to my dressing room early. I will prepare. I'll warm up. The concertmaster has a very exposed place in the orchestra, sitting right there in the front. The audience's eyes are very much drawn to that front area where all the principals sit, principal second, principal viola, principal cello, the conductor, and the concertmaster. Just by virtue of the fact that the concertmaster walks on stage to begin the concert and tunes the orchestra, kind of draws people's attention right there. Then we go into rehearsal. Before rehearsal, I usually will knock on the maestro's door, whoever that may be. If it's Yannick, of course, if he's in town, go in and say hello. Anything, maestro, last second that you need to talk about? If it's a guest conductor, welcome them to town. Let them know that I want to be their right-hand man while they're in town. Do they need a restaurant recommendation? Do they need to know where to buy concert socks? Just anything, please depend on their concertmaster. And then go on stage and then rehearse just like everybody else. And then afternoon might be spent picking up my kids from school and everything, but it might also involve some interviews. It might involve a board meeting. And then turn around, come back to the hall, and it's time for the concert. And many times I'm entertaining patrons at intermission, bringing them backstage, showing them kind of our music library, our break room, my dressing room, autographing CDs for them. I'm just trying to truly be a good ambassador for the orchestra to our loyal patrons.
Wow, it sounds like on any given week you might be switching right brain, left brain with studying music and practicing and playing and doing administrative things.
Absolutely. And I don't say, I know that concertmasters are supposed to be really crack violinists, but and I don't say this out of false modesty, really. I just feel that one of the main reasons that I miraculously won this job in 1999 was that I think one of my gifts is being able to switch right brain, left brain, to be able to speak in public comfortably, to be able to entertain and speak to third graders about an orchestra, about a violin and a bow. Not all classical musicians are comfortable speaking in public extemporaneously, in the press, perhaps answering difficult questions. And so I truly feel that that is perhaps more than my violin playing the reason that I occupy this position. And the violin playing is something that I consider a struggle many times, but I'm trying as hard as I can, and I love it. But I love all aspects of being a concertmaster equally. There's no part of being a concertmaster that I say, oh, I really don't want to talk to the press, or I don't want to go and play for those kids in the elementary school. I love all those things as well.
I was just going to ask you what you enjoy the most. Maybe I should ask you what you're most excited about now, this orchestra, this time, this position, going forward.
Well, I think in terms of looking forward and what I'm really excited about, it really is to the unknown. The Philadelphia Orchestra is a solid, old, tradition-bound organization that has really been set in its ways for over a century. And now with this new era upon us, with Yannick, this tweeting, working out, young, hip guy coming in, who is a complete package. He's a musical genius, and yet he understands how to draw in young people. He knows how to light that spark. The sky is the limit, and the future holds many new things, new initiatives. And so I look forward to whatever those may be. Our pilot residency in China last year, which will continue for the next 4 years, we go there every summer now, is tremendously exciting. And all this travel that we do is just an incredible perk of the job. But you know, it's fantastic to be able to be an ambassador for the city of Philadelphia through the Philadelphia Orchestra as we travel all over the world to Carnegie Hall in New York, to really be on the world stage, but to represent our city, our Commonwealth, the Lehigh Valley. It's truly, truly a privilege for all of us.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.